Join the football pod on Off the Ball.
You don't have that many years as a player. You can't scratch off a year and have a bad year just because your coaches are gone. You have to be strong enough to be able to say, we're still going to have a great year.
Join in the obsession and tune in to the football pod on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
You're very welcome along. It is a little bit later than planned, but it is The Hurling Pod in advance of the All-Ireland quarterfinals. We're down to just six teams left in the championship now at this stage. Five matches left. Just about a month away now from the All-Ireland final, so it's all going to come around really quickly indeed. There was no mercy whatsoever from Dublin last weekend. Admittedly, Kildare were on the beer for at least 2 days, maybe three, and it just didn't happen for them when it came to the game in Newbridge last week. Dublin with a pretty commanding 21-point victory at Newbridge, which put the Joe McDonagh Cup champions out of the championship. The Dubs now looking to register a third successive championship victory against Limerick when they meet at Croke Park on Saturday. Limerick playing in the quarterfinals for the first time since 2018. Also, the only time Dublin have won an All-Ireland quarterfinal, when they beat Limerick back in 2011. They've lost all the other five times they've got to a quarterfinal. Tipperary will need a first championship win against Galway in some 9 years if the Premier are to reach the semi-finals for the first time since 2019. Tip again, cruising past Laois by 23 points. More debate sparked about whether the preliminary quarterfinals have got any future, at least in their current form. A couple of years ago, though, it was voted by the counties at Congress to keep them in. So I think it's still going to require that if they're going to be removed. I know when we spoke to Willie Maher, he was kind of open to ideas about reforming the championship and reforming particularly the primary quarterfinals. So I'm delighted to say that we've got Paul Murphy here. Paul, how are you?
Good, lads. How are you?
James Skell, how are you?
Good. How's all?
Yeah, it's very well. Galway have got a tremendous championship record against Tipperary, by the way. Does that give you hope?
Hope, yes. Yeah. I use that word quite a lot when it comes to Galway. I always say we'll hope versus expectancy, and I'm on the side of hope.
Like, these games have been great. I think sometimes we don't delve into the Galway-Tipperary championship rivalry quite enough. So they've met 15 times since 1988, and there's only been 3 points between them in any of those games.
Yeah. I think, I suppose in more recent times, probably the Premier rivalry has been probably Limerick and Clare, it's fair to say, mm-hmm. You know, in kind of the late 2020s. But before that was Tip and Galway. That was kind of the best Premier game aptward rivalry in hurling for probably, I suppose, 6 or 7 years. And it seems to have continued forward right through into the 20s. Like, so it's always a tasty game. It's always a game that's not really, how would I say, embroiled by tactics overall. It's just it seems like always two 15s that just go at it. And it's always a high pace, high octane, regardless of venue, and regardless of form too, you could say, because even if you rewind back a couple of years ago, we were coming off the back of a disappointing Leinster final and produced, I would call it, a surprising performance in B-Tip. So That's where the hope comes from.
Yeah, that was 23. Again, I think a lot of people probably expected Tip that time around to win at the same venue, but Galway coming out by a couple of points. Murph, it's difficult now to feel about this, because in a way, I was thinking again about the way that Galway performed in the Leinster final. And where Skell says it's hope versus expectation, that 15-minute period in the second half shows what Galway can do. But I've seen very little evidence that Galway are able to do it for longer than that period of time in terms of what we've seen in the championship so far.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair summation of them. Like, if you look at, you can probably pick of any team really, going back through the years, like teams failing to really get any sort of form, like really join the dots together and get, I suppose, running into consecutive matches playing 70 minutes of hurling. And they're invariably the teams that do just drop out of the championship, and they'll point to it and say, you know, for 20 minutes we hurled well here, for 30 minutes we hurled well here, and so on. But the pattern is more so pointing to the fact not being able to string together 70 minutes. It is kind of the tale of Galway so far. Like, there's no denying Galway's threat, their ability, their talent, their skill, their everything is there. But it's just not clicking for them at the moment, and kind of maybe hasn't over the last few years. And that's the problem there. Like, nobody's looking at Galway going, well, like, you know, you have Mannion, both Mannions, you have Conor Whelan, you know, you have Dahi Burke and these lads, albeit those lads are at the other side of 30. And then you have young lads coming through, and you've always had good underage teams. But at the moment, it's just not clicking for them. When if you look to the other side with Tipperary, like if you go back 3 years ago, Galway have a far stronger team on paper than Tipperary. But the pendulum has swung in Tipperary's favour now. And like very much at the moment, Tipperary have momentum, which is a big thing. So like if people even pulled apart both panels now as they stand and you did matchups, the matchups for me aren't, not to say they're not that important at the moment, but it's the cohesive unit, how they're operating and how they're functioning. That'll be the one thing I'd be looking at. And Tipperary at the moment, they're going well. Do you know? I mean, right through the Munster Championship, they were going really well. Like, if that Cork match, you know, if Darren McCarthy doesn't get sent off straight away, who knows what way that would have finished. And that, in one way, actually, I think, feeds into the potential of Tipperary for this year, because people don't know really yet exactly how high is this Tipperary team going to hit this year. Like, Galway are fully capable of going out the weekend and turning them over, purely because maybe they need that emotional spark. They can do it. But if you were to say on form at the moment, like, obviously you have to say Tipperary going on form, because when you look at when Tipperary have had more challenges this year, and I say that even for Kilkenny, Tipperary have had more challenges than Kilkenny have had this year. So we've learned a little bit more about them, and we've also got to know them a little bit better. And like, one thing I took from the weekend, Willie Connors was interviewed after the game, and it was very straight up. He went, look, job done. You know, we came up here to get the job done and go. Some people would look at that and say, maybe not the most political correct answer to going out and beating Laois by 20 points or whatever. But for me, that gave me an insight into the mindset of where they're at the moment. They're looking to reset and go straight back again. One match and we're in an All-Ireland semi-final in the quarter-final, you know, as in, so beating Galway, we're into an All-Ireland semi-final. So for me, the thought process for Tipperary is a little bit more simple at the moment than Galway facing into this game. Because Galway are coming into it going, you know, why didn't we perform for so long against Kilkenny? But then for the last 20 minutes, we performed really well. So they're going to ask themselves, how do we harness that for 70 minutes? What gets us... Whereas Tipperary don't have to ask that question, if that makes sense. Tipperary just kind of go, well, we've shown a few games where we're hurling really well. So that, for me, is where this game starts at the weekend. It's a case of Tipperary coming into this really strong place. They'll be delighted going into an All-Ireland semi-final in the position that they're in, if they go into it, let's say. But they'll be delighted going in that way. Whereas Galway are very much looking at it going, we have to go up through a few levels here to beat this Tipperary team. And after that, we'll worry about it. But that's what we have to do for this game. So look, potential is definitely there for Galway. But you'd have to say Tipperary are just coming in a stronger position.
Mm-hmm. Scott, when I was talking to Fintan Burke last week at the championship launch, he was saying that, I appreciate that was only a few days after the Leinster final, he was saying you can't afford to have a provincial final hangover. He was like, you just have to park that. It's now a case of the path is very clear. They were waiting that weekend to see who won between Tipperary and Laois. He was being politically correct by saying who's going to win, as opposed to saying, I know we're playing Tip in a couple of weekends' time. In this case, they know now that it's Tipperary, that's their path to try and get into an All-Ireland semi-final. Like, is there an emotional scar when you come out after losing a provincial final and have to reset like this?
I don't think for losing the final in general, there's an emotional scar. I think it's the manner in which you lost it.
Hmm.
You know, and I think I can appreciate people will point towards that 15-minute spell as kind of an element of positivity, but I just don't. Like, that game was over. Like, in real terms, reality, that was garbage time for Kilkenny. They were so far ahead that they just took the foot off the gas, you know. And it's easy to be a big man in those 10 or 15 minutes and come back when, you know, the result is already forewritten. So, like, I don't hold much value on that 10 or 15 minutes. And yes, if you're in the management team and part of that group, you have to point towards that 10 or 15 minutes as some element of positivity to bring yourself forward, right? But the provincial final aside, the loss of the cup, it's actually irrelevant. It's the manner in which we got beaten was the problem. So, and for me, like, Murph would listed out all the items there. Like, there is parity amongst, you know, Kilkenny, Tip, Galway, in terms of skill levels of players, you know, fitness levels, strength levels, they say. So all the tangibles are there. It's just, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, it's putting them together and doing it under pressure against a team that's organised and kind of comes at you with full throttle, they say. That's kind of been Galway's issue at the minute, whereby they've been, you know, mediocre and haven't been able to match intensity levels and even tactical, I suppose, awareness in-game for the players. Because we spoke a lot, I think, to be honest, about being able to adapt to what's put in front of you on the pitch as a player, because, you know, you can only get so many messages from a management team onto your team when it's live. So we're struggling with that. Our personnel, as I said before, positions 5-8, we turned over the ball 20 times against Kilkenny. It's far too many, way too many at this level. So there was a lot of areas to focus on, to be fair, after the Leinster final. And it wasn't like, I do give, I suppose, appreciation to Kilkenny that they did run right through us, Will, to be honest. They ran right mm-hmm. through us. And it wasn't as if that, you know, they were far, far superior. It's just that there was times in the game where we let them. We let them completely. You know, and there was like, take Adrian Mullen, for example, you know, and I'm a big believer in that, you know, you see a man play a certain way, that's a forewarning for you. You know, and we saw Adrian Mullen in Leinster finals in the past playing against Galway, where he drops way out in 65, and then our halfback can't adapt. And we stand there like guard gnomes, and Adrian Mullen becomes one of the major link mental kinney, and an awful lot comes off him. And still we don't learn as the game goes on. Do you know what I mean? So like that to me is a sign of situational unawareness. Do you know what I mean? That like the damage being done by a man, you know, out, let's say, in a position that you wouldn't normally associate yourself with if you're a wing back, you know, is deemed to be lesser than if I just wait here in my own position. You know, it didn't make sense to me. So there was a lot of items to assess and to look at from a goalie perspective. In the same breath, I say that there isn't huge time. There's not a huge amount of time here to go and recruit new players or implement new game plans or systems or rejig the team during fitting a challenge game. It's not in it, lads. It's just not there. Every team is busy in their own preparation. So what you have to do is look after your own house. So what I'm expecting, and I feel like I'm having this conversation, or this type of conversation with G for the fourth time, because I spoke about it after the Tipperary League game. I then re-spoke about it after the Cork League game. Then I spoke about it after the Kilkenny first game in Championship and the Leinster final. So sorry, I'm actually having this for the fifth time. Okay, so it's like, you know, at what stage do we just forget about tactics, forget about, you know, I suppose all the planned elements and just be there for the fight? And I'm blue in the face, and people always say to me, even in Galway here, stop talking about Kilkenny and their fight and their passion, their will. I won't, because they're the standard bearers. Like, I'm not just saying because this man's across from me, but every day Kilkenny go out. Every day, no matter what happens, they're up for the fight. And I can tell you, probably more of you might correct me here, sometimes in Galway, we put too much value on training well. You know what I mean? Training well and not playing well. Whereas Kilkenny, I'd say they train to play. It's all about the match. It's all about the 70 minutes. It's all about the championship game. Nothing else gives a shit or matters in the 2 weeks, 3 weeks prior. Sometimes I feel like some players in Galway put value on, I'm going well, I'm training well. Yeah, but are you playing well in the match? That's what I want to know. Like, you might be training mighty in a comfortable setting, you know what I mean, where the result is irrelevant. But in the match, when you're going up against a peer or a nemesis, let's say, how are you able to adapt to that? And sometimes our players, right, put more value in training than in the game, whereas Kilkenny put all the value on the game as opposed to training. So I'm just saying, in a broad term, adapt that kind of mentality for Saturday and just go at it. Because the potential is in the team if they just throw off the shackles and go at it in a very loose manner, whereby don't be, I suppose, you know, restricted or handicapped by being overly tactical or thinking too much. Just fucking go at it. Like I said about the Limerick and Cork Munster final, that was two teams that were devoid of any tactics and just went at it from a full, you know, from a pleasant perspective where, as I said before, their subconscious was in operation. Sometimes I think in Galway's perspective, they're too conscious of what they're at and it restricts them. So when I use the word hope, I'm saying that from a place of, I hope they just go at it, play to the potential, because I've seen all these lads up close, you know, either in club championship or playing for Galway, and it's in the locker. They just have to produce it.
Yeah. One of the things about this as well, Murph, is Micheál has come back in for his second stint here, and I can totally understand the need to look at players, because even a lot of the key players that are on the Galway team are still there from the last decade, and they're down the spine of this team. We even see like David Burke having a different role, but you want to get him onto the pitch this time round, and they're trying younger players in, and he's used over 30 players now, I think, after the two keepers played in the Leinster final in Championship this year. So he's had a look at two teams effectively over the course of the group stages in the Leinster final. While Tipperary, I think with Jake Morris, if he's fit, comes back into that team. But you could pretty much pick the Tipperary or close enough to that Tipperary 15 before the game comes round. For me, this feels like I know what to expect from Tipperary at the Gaelic Grounds, but I'm not 100% sure what to expect out of Galway.
That's very fair, yeah. And I think...
Isn't that awful?
I think as well, though... Like, Tipperary have gone through their period where, you know, we've probably had this conversation with Tipperary over the last few years. Like, the narrative around Tipperary, you go back 2 or 3 years ago, was that they didn't bring through enough underage players into that team. They were too reliant on the older fellas, and maybe they should have blooded a few players. And it was kind of accepted then that they would have to go through a few years of bringing those players up to standard. And like during that time, like Jason Ford was shooting the lights out, for example, and he was kind of heavily reliant on him for that. You know, Jake Morris was there, Mark Keogh, there was plenty of lads. And of course, like Jamie Callan and the lads were there, although you knew that they were starting to move on, and if he got another year out of them, fantastic. But they were looking in the rearview mirror going, who are the young lads coming through here? They had that period. And like, Galway have now transitioned from management. Henry will see that as, you know, he would have liked to achieve more. He would have liked to at least win the Leinster and get to an All-Ireland final and see what happens there. But they didn't achieve that. So Henry will be disappointed with that. You then bring back in Micheál Donoghue, who Micheál will have the conviction that he's won an All-Ireland with Galway. And I think he's coming with a conviction here of going, what do I do? Do I move on a small bit of, you know, what I deem to be non-essential players? Do I move on all non-essential players, regardless of their reputation? Do I do a full clear out? Do I do what do I do? And I think, Michal, I don't think he'd say it yet. I think he, but I'd say he planned that. I want to have a panel that is going to be us building for 2 years' time or 3 years' time. Not a case that I need an instant reaction this year for 1 year. I believe Michal would love to see fighting the team. He'd love to see them competing definitely really well. And I'm sure he's disappointed that isn't happening. But I'm sure Michal Donoghue was more so going to this going, look, this team is actually at a period where a few of those players are going to step away. Those key players that have been there over the last few years. We have great players there in the dressing room. But there might be a few hard yards have to be put in before we get to that stage again where we kind of, I suppose, redevelop and then go back competing again. But I think the concern for him at the moment is that he's going, geez, we took too much of a step back there. And that's more on the players. I really wouldn't look at the management in that scenario because, you know, fight can always be present, regardless if the tactics maybe aren't right or whatever else isn't there. But you can always fight. Like, you can always run out and be dogged and be tough and, you know, fight for ball. I'm not accusing even Galway players of that, but it doesn't look like it's very present really at times. The thing was going into Leinster final, and I probably forgot to say it on here, I kind of had a feeling, like I was going, Jesus, I just remember back in 2012, we came in and underestimated Galway and they burnt us so hard. And I know I've said that plenty of times, but I actually coming in the run into the game, even on the Friday or Saturday, I kind of went, geez, I don't have a good feeling about this game just because Galway have been so quiet and maybe they've under-impressed. Genuinely, though, James, like, you know.
I'm very surprised because, like, I would classify you as a very shrewd operator, like, and a shrewd analyst. And I, and this from a Galway perspective, like, in 2012, personally speaking, I knew we were coming to town. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but we didn't.
But I get you. But in this instance, right, I didn't feel it at all. Like, I was texting you on the day and I was saying, geez, this could be bleak.
You know, before the match, was it? Yeah. Did you text me that before? Yeah.
No, we were texting, right, and I was saying, this could be a long day, like.
Well, no, what I meant before the ball was thrown in, I was like, Galway could just, put it this way, if Conor Whelan hits form, if Mannion hits form, if Concannon hits form, I was like, this is a team that 2 years ago had Kilkenny bet Barra, Killian, Buckley hitting the ball in the back of the net. So I was thinking, the bones of it are there. I was just saying the potential was there. And let's say if Kilkenny turned up the way they did in the second half against Wexford down in Wexford Park. So for me, what I was saying is that there's still a threat in this Galway team, but when the fight isn't present, there's no threat in this team. Whereas if there's not as much fight in the Limerick team, they could still win the game because they're at a different level. And I use that for anything, but Limerick in particular. So for me, looking at Galway, I'm just saying that I can't understand where the fight isn't, like why it's not there, but I can understand that if they weren't competing this year because it's Michal Donoghue's first year and we see bigger improvements next year, I understand that part of it. But for me, I'd agree with you, Will, but bringing you back to your point that, you know, going to the Gaelic grounds on Saturday, I just don't see where that threat is going to come from because there's no, that bite hasn't been there. And I think Skehill touched on it, that you can't just turn that on between games. It's very hard just to suddenly come along and find what you're, you know, find that mojo and switch it on. Now, Tipperary might be the game for them. It might be the game that picks them up.
Yeah, history and they get the performance. It is the type of game, but I just want to clarify one. When people hear this podcast and they hear the word fight, I'm not talking about us trying to win the ball back. You know, that's only one element of fight. Like, fight, as we know, Murph, is on getting on the breaking ball first. You know, running through the Tipperary defence, or penetrating runs, breaching their defence, you know, shutting down their poke out. All this kind of stuff, that's all fight. So when I say fight, I'm not talking about just turning over or tackling them. No, it's not that. Or being aggressive. It's not that. It's that just, it's that kind of, I use the term honest endeavour at every facet of play and attacking every facet of play. And it's I think it's easy to fight if your mind is in the right place. And you might pull it off. You might put off the technical skills. And that's absolutely fine. I can take a technical error. I always say that to even lads in coaching. But I cannot take, I suppose, an error in choice whereby you decide not to go into the break or not go after, you know, high ball and not fucking take it on when it's there in front of you. You know, all that kind of stuff. So that's where the worry comes from, that pattern has been, you know, I won't say evolved. It's here. It's here. The league games, the 12 points, the three games we got beaten, the Kilkenny game below Northern Park, the Kilkenny game again in Croke Park, let's say. It's not just one element, it's or one game, it's been five. You know, so there's not just a pattern. It's in place, right? So to quite, like, even go back to the Tipperary game we had 2 years ago, I can think of Gareth Mack at fullback, Dahi Burke at centre back, Joe Cooney at centre forward, Joe Cooney in midfield, Keane Fahey at centre back. Do you know what I mean? There was like lads in those lines that could carry things forward, whereby If Jake Morris is at 11 now, and Jake Morris is a different animal this year than he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, he is.
So he's going to ask monumental questions of our half-back line. He mightn't be at 11. It could be Ormond. He might be at 10. He might be at 12. You just don't know. He might be on the 15 jersey, but be Roman. He's going to ask huge questions. He's going to be an awful threat to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did say, go back 2 years ago, I didn't see any threat in Jake Morris because he was isolated in his corner and he didn't have that fight in him. The fight's in him now, lad. It's in him.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he's proven it. He's proven the fight's in him. He's proven he's able to carry through hard tackles and shut down lads and take on the hard belts, as they take the punishment when you're heading for the black spot. He's proven that. So there's elements of the Tipperary forward line that are worrisome. And I just think the Tipperary of today is a different animal than they were 2 years ago.
Mm. Yeah,
you know,
I thought Ormond shooting at the weekend was really good as well. I know he ended up with 3 points, but put over three crackers. And like Willie Connors when he got the ball in hand. And I appreciate that, you know, at times Leash's fight seemed to kind of burn out a little bit after the second half of the first half. But still, when Connors got the ball, he wanted to make something happen. Like whether that was getting the ball into the full forward line or taking on shots himself. Totally understandable why he got man of the match. I know you mentioned him talking about it earlier, but he certainly is more than happy to dictate the tempo himself now at this stage as well. So I think Morris can be very difficult. And if we're looking at maybe Gavin Lee playing there at six, who like doesn't have that many games at six as well, Murph, I don't know whether they leave Morris around there, whether he drifts around. I'm not sure exactly how it works out. I see Skell grimacing already. So before he got to Murph, what are you thinking?
It's not a grimace. I'm not sure whether I see Lee at six.
Okay. Who would you play at six then?
I would have... this is where it gets tricky, because if Fintan was available, Will, I'd have Fintan at fullback, right? And I put Dahi out to centre-back.
I think, by the way, that Fintan Burke's going to be okay to play this.
Yeah, I know he's got what is believed to be a neck injury, which is kind of semi-serious, which is not great now. I think about with that kind of body part. So if he's available, please God, touch wood, he is.
He did say last week he was very hopefully be fit.
Okay, then Park at two, Fintan at three, Darren Morrissey at four. That's my fullback line.
Okay.
And then I put in Dahi at six. And now then I feel better about myself. Do you know what I mean? That's not throwing slight at Gavin Lee. Gavin Lee is a fantastic hurler. I just think it's a young man for a season position. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it takes time to bed yourself in there. You don't see a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, you know, he's 21 or 22, slot into six and become dominant. I just don't see it. Mm. You know? So that's why I'm saying it just takes a bit of time. Maybe he can adapt at seven or five. So...
Mm. All right, Murphy's taking that one away. Tipperary fans...
Sorry.
No, indulge me for a second here, because you're going to say we're in the middle of the preview and I'm liking the boys talking positively about Tipperary. But allow me just to pull at the thread of something for a moment. When you said in 2012, you kind of had a feeling about Galway that day. Mm. What gave you that feeling?
No, what I was actually saying was that I didn't have a feeling in 2012. I had no feeling, but...
Oh, so that caught you totally unawares.
Yeah, it caught us totally unawares. And going into this Leinster final, albeit... Like, you look back at the Galway team that this fellow was in, and like, you know, having Canning and the boys are saying, "How wouldn't you?" No, we didn't, and that was the naivety we came into the game, and completely unintentional. And we've used that to reference other games where teams come in not prepared. But maybe because I was scared after that one, I came into this Leinster final with Galway being less of a threat. I kind of go on that one game, and like, even if you go back there, was it 3 years ago, two years ago. Galway playing Cork in Thurles, and they rallied in the quarter final and they got a big performance. I'm going to say it was 2 years ago, and I just remember like Dahi Burke's big shoulder on Seamus Harnady. That kind of was just a pure emotional performance, and they needed it because again they were kind of in a similar situation where they weren't really performing and you couldn't put your finger on it why. So for me, there's two ways you can look at a team. Currently, are they? Do they possess a clear and present threat? Like, are they looking at them, which Tipperary do? If you're looking at Tipperary now, you'd say, quite obviously, they are a threat because they're going well. But I'm looking at Galway then going, at the moment, I don't see them as a threat. But the other question then you ask is, do they have the potential to be a big one if on the day they somehow arrive and it clicks? Yes, that's where I'd be looking at them. But in 2012... No, we had absolutely no perception. Now, I don't know if that scuppers your question altogether.
No. I was just interested. Actually, I kind of misheard you ever so slightly. So I said I'd get you to clarify in case at some point, like you were going onto the pitch in 2012 and you went, I'm just not really feeling this, or there's some reason for that. But
no, we just came into it in a good place and then they caught us. And like that, Tipperary coming into this game in a good place. I don't see Tipperary being caught because they didn't come through as provincial champions. Now, granted, Galway bet us in the provincial final that year. But because Tipperary didn't come through as provincial champions, their kind of feet are on the ground anyway. Like, you know, they're not going through, like, Cork at the moment. Cork now have to answer that question in the semi-final to say, do our standards drop because we come in as the provincial champions and maybe we underestimate the next team? It's always a danger when you're the farm team coming in. So for Tipperary this weekend, that is a real threat, in that they're coming in going, well, we're going to beat this Galway team because we haven't seen anything from them over the last few weeks to say that these lads are a threat. But then if Galway arrive, and it goes back to something Scale said earlier, and we've said it plenty of times, if Galway arrive on the day and just suddenly present something that Tipperary weren't expecting, and Tipperary's form is off by a couple of percent, suddenly now you can't change that on the day. And Scale mentioned it a few minutes ago, you can't change the plan now, and suddenly you're scrambling during the game. So that's where I'm seeing that this game, the only way it swings in Galway's favour, if that Tipperary underestimate them a small bit, and Galway then, you know, get to a level we haven't seen this year.
Yeah. Mannion dependency is a thing, by the way. So I totted up the scores the two teams have done and their individual scores a little bit earlier on today. So Col Mannion has got 254, 35 points coming from frees, and he hit that goal that was flicked in by Donal Shirley from the 65, which has been credited to him as well. Brian Kilcannon's got 310 from play, which is, like, very impressive. Yeah. Conor Cooney's 114 was primarily against Antrim.
Antrim, yeah.
Tom Onan's got 13 points, Conor Whelan's got 9, and Anthony Burns has got 2-3. Tipperary spread it around much better, particularly from play. So Jason Ford and Darren McCarthy are their free takers, so they're naturally going to be way out in front. 223, and there is 24 of that from dead balls for Ford, including a couple of those beautiful sideline cuts that he put over as well. Darren McCarthy has got 22 points from frees out of his 28 points. Then you've got John McGrath, who's been rolling back the years this year with 4-9. Jake Morris has scored 13 points from play, and Andrew Ormond, who I already mentioned, has scored 2 goals and 8 points, and they've got a decent spread of some of their other scorers as well. Like, that to me would again indicate, Scale, that Tipperary have got a better array of options here in their forward line. I don't know if I'm being too simple with that.
I don't think you're being too simple. I think also when we look at the, and I appreciate that they played Laois, but throughout the course of the championship they've had stiffer competition, to be fair. And Galway have had an extra game. Is that fair to say? Haven't we had an extra game?
One more game in the group stages, and would have played against Offaly and Antrim, where you won very heavily.
Yeah, so the opposition would say we had less level than what's faced in Munster. So when I see those kind of scores, you would expect there to be a big gap between the Galway scores and Tipperary, but there's not. There's just not, let's say. And I know Carl Mannion stands out, and, like, for me, he's probably, there's probably 4 or 5 hurlers that are in hurler of the year territory at the moment, if they continue on the same trajectory, and he's one of them, I think it's fair to say.
Oh, who's the other four?
Oh, fuck yeah. Sorry.
Well, you knew that was coming. You don't walk yourself into this by going, I'm going to put a hypothetical out here and say he's somewhere in the top five.
Oh, that's a fabulous question. That is a tough question. Straight away, I go through each county, right? Mm-hmm. Hugh Lawler, Kilkenny's in my head.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say I can't go down to any other Leinster counties beyond that, right? So I'm putting every other Leinster county away for the moment.
By the way, I feel a little bit sorry for Lee Chin here, but this is exactly what happens every year. He plays really well in the games for Wexford, but they don't go far enough.
So I can appreciate it, but just they don't go far enough. I'm sorry to say that. But if I jumped in, I'm skipping Clare. Not quite Tipperary at the moment either, although there is an honourable shout for Ronan Maher. Cork and Limerick. Jesus. Cork.
Well, I would think from Limerick straight away, Kyle Hayes has to be a contender.
Yeah, he is for sure. Jesus, Dan Morrissey a lot too. I know I'm leaning towards backs here, but Dan Morrissey's been brilliant as well. And here's me talking about 2 full backs in her of the year. Hmm. If I'm wrong, correct me. Dan Morrissey's been excellent. Hugh Lawler's been fantastic. Yeah. Kyle Hayes has been fantastic.
I'm liking this defence-dominated her of the year conversation.
Yeah, he's been very impressive. You know,
For the forward, surely, Darragh Fitzgibbon and Brian Hayes for a
Darragh Fitzgibbon has been very impressive. Brian Hayes is
well, maybe he zipped off a little bit in the last few games.
Well, his league form was better than his championship form to date.
Yeah.
I'm just, again, that's fair, because his league was out of this world, I think, to be fair. So, but still class, like. So, yeah, okay, I'm going to round it off. I'm going to say Fitzgibbon, Hugh Lawler, Dan Morrissey, Kyle Hayes, Colin Mannion.
Wow. Defenders Union, Murph. Do you have as many defenders in your top five?
I don't have a top five.
I didn't either.
I was staring off over the tips of houses here, trying to think of lads who have had great performances. So I'm going to let Scale have that one there. I think we should digest his one then.
Am I missing? Okay. Put them names aside for the moment. Am I missing anybody else? Obvious.
Call it to five again.
So I had Hugh Lawler, Dan Morrissey, Kyle Hayes, I had Darragh Fitzgibbon, Colin Mannion. Then I had honourable mentions for the likes of Keane Lynch.
I think Lynch is in the conversation. I would think it's probably
six.
Lynch, Hayes, Fitzgibbon would probably be the absolute front runners at the moment. But Kyle Mannion's been brilliant. He really has.
Mm.
League and championship.
And that Hugh Lawler. Jesus.
Well, it depends where Kilkenny go from here. Like,
but Hugh Lawler has been absolutely imperious. Is that fair? Yeah. I think it's fair.
Mm. Totally.
I know
he's locked down everyone he's marked so far. So like
I think he's been the best defender in the championship.
Oof.
Yeah.
Come on, he has so far, yeah.
Yes, that's hard to argue that now.
Hmm.
And that's not to say Morrissey and Hayes weren't brilliant now.
There's no one jumping out that you've left out at the moment. Because I think once you get away from the I know it's completely hypothetical, once you get away from, like, let's say the sixth area and you drift into lads who have been playing really well but just are missing that, like, at the end of the day, the hurler of the year is going to be in serious form by the time he gets to it. So the lads who are showing flickers of that, but then you get into a group which you could have about 30 lads in who are just off it, like, you know. So I'd say it's probably a six at the moment, really, isn't it? It's about that.
Like, at this stage last year, was Tony Kelly in the reckoning for hurler of the year?
Not really, no, because the year started slowly for him coming back from injury as well. So
so the landscape might change dramatically in the next 4 weeks.
But Shane O'Donnell won the last year.
No, but my point was in the final, let's say, he got into hurler of the year contention.
Sorry, I get you.
He had an unbelievable final, let's say, but he was poor in the Munster. And then the conversation on last year was, oh, Tony Kelly's hurler of the year. Now, Shane O'Donnell won it, but my point being is Shane O'Donnell had a steady course of brilliance throughout the course of the championship, but to Tony Kelly, and see where he found himself at the end of the finish. It's like, my point being, what may happen in the next month could be way different from now, you know.
Without wanting to go off into a massive tangent here, like, I can kind of understand why waiting goes on the final few games as well. Like, I think if someone has a remarkable semi-final or final, there's no reason they can't go into that conversation. So say, you know the way, like, Hugh Lawler has been really, really consistent up until this point. I know you both love him. Like, say if Hugh Lawler goes into an All-Ireland semi-final, right, and say they end up playing against Limerick, and he does a really good job on Aaron Gillan or whoever was in on him, right? Mm. And say Kilkenny gets the All-Ireland final, then straight away his stock has increased because of what he's done in the semi-final. Is that fair?
High level, yeah.
No, it is. It is, like, and I would have seen lads over the years who, like, had a good, let's say, innings up as far as the semi-final, had really good semi-final and final, and their hurler of the year. But the likes of, if I use Dan Morrissey, for example, Dan Morrissey may never win a hurler of the year, but if you were to look at the first league match to the All-Ireland final, he could be the best player overall. But I'd agree with you, there's a waiting there. I'm not saying it's biased against those players, but a player whose style is quite unassuming but is always kind of very peerless, like Dan Morrissey, could just drift through, and because they don't do anything major, a player who may potentially have done less but hurled really well in a semi-final or final would tip them. Do you know that sort of way? Which is kind of, that's one time where I go, like, I'd often look at the hurler of the year and go, I would think hard about lads who may not have lit up the stage, but again, emphasis on the year, who was really good over the course of the year. Like, that's another consideration. But I agree with you, like, Will, in fairness, you're saying there has to be a waiting. There does have to be a waiting for semi-final and final, in fairness.
Yeah.
But, like, isn't it, I know we're going way off tangent, and I apologise.
We'll come back.
Jeremy Burns won Hurler of the Year there a couple of years ago.
Yep. But
in every competition, or every sport rather, it's always forward dominated in terms of the best player.
Yeah.
The Ballon d'Or, for example, heavily towards forwards, right? So the likelihood of a Hugh Lawler or Dan Morrissey getting Hurler of the Year is a lot lesser, and they have to put their head above the parapet way higher than a forward, I would say. So they have to stand out head and shoulders, to be honest. So it's going to be... Yeah. And, like, Burns, a big reason he got Hurler of the Year himself was...
Where
he was
scores in the free.
He scored,
of course. Yeah. What am I right in saying?
I have it open in front of me, so go on.
The last lad to do...
We'll list the winners open in front of me.
Oh, I love this now.
Tony Brown, 98. Did he win it from the quarterfinal?
That's a good point.
Tony Brown won the Hurler of the Year from quarter final, I think. He definitely was. I think it was 98 he won it.
So 98, Offaly beat Cork in the semi final. Who did Kilkenny beat in the other semi final? Was it Clare?
No, Offaly played Clare.
Oh, sorry, Offaly played Clare in the saga. Who did Kilkenny play in their semi final?
In 98.
98.
But that was Waterford, Murph. Did Waterford not beat Galway in the quarter final in 98?
Well, if you have your list, the list is there, right? Mm-hmm. What year did Tony Brown win it?
98.
Oh, sure, Jesus, so he must have. I don't remember Kilkenny playing Waterford up until maybe the early 2000s for me going to matches. I think Kilkenny, 98.
I'll check it, hold on.
The back door wasn't in.
No, 98 was the first year the back door. Offaly won it through the back door, as in they were the first winners through the back door.
Did it play Galway?
No, Waterford knocked us out in 98, Murph.
Oh, did they? Nice.
I just remember Tony Brown's floppy hair bopping around Croke Park.
before anybody shouts at us, Kilkenny beat Waterford in the semi-final by a point.
Okay, so he made the semi-final.
Made semi-final, yeah.
111-110. There you are. Even the score alone, like, you know. That
gives it away.
And then, Waterford would have beaten Munster finals that year. They lost to Clare.
And even lads who have won it from a losing position, like Dan Shanahan would be Hurler of the Year in 2000, and he was semi-final as well, wasn't it?
They got to final in 2007, didn't they? Lost to Kilkenny, no?
No, 2008 they got to the final. Limerick got to the final. I think Dan Shanahan was Hurler of the Year in 2007, and he got like 3 goals in the semi-final, something like that. Mm. But he was Hurler of the Year. Like, a lot of Ireland semi-final being Hurler of the Year, that's a fair achievement, like. You know, yeah, 2 Waterford men, actually. I've just highlighted
so the question mark for raising indirectly is, has anyone won it prior to that stage in the championship?
I wasn't, actually, but I just thought... I thought Tony Brown... I wouldn't say anyone's won it from a quarter final.
I'd say very, very unlikely.
I saw a great one today, actually. You keep talking there. I did see a good one on Twitter, and I'm going to bring it up now. And I think we will come back to Hurling. Oh, not Hurling, but we'll come back to the matches this weekend. But
it's like a dirty joke for you. I'll tell you off here.
I have
a dirty joke, yeah.
Yes. Let me see now.
That's for the post members podcast.
Okay.
While Murph thinks about this, by the way, the defenders to win it, Brian Lowen won the very first one in 95 of, you know, the new Hurler of the Year. And then you've come up through here, you're going to have JJ won it in 2003, Sean Ogue in 04. And then you've got Tommy Walsh, 2009. Then you've got a sizable gap where it's like elite forwards and, say, Michael Fennelly as a midfielder winning it over the period of about 10 years there. And then you had Dermot Burns in 2022. So generally, like, it's incredibly forward orientated. Like, nearly everyone you see there.
Is it five or six players?
Yeah, I think so. You've got if I go back to the start, Lone, one, there's two.
In 30 seasons?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Since back to 95, yeah.
I came across a good one here now. So I saw it today. So I'll give credit here. Sean O'Mara had it up on Twitter, right? So he came across the All-Star poster. What year is it now? The 9 All-Star Awards. It doesn't even say a year.
So late 70s. Would have been 78 or 79, I'd say, is it?
Yeah, it's around that anyway. Yeah. So you're dead right. It's 79 and 80. A lad, Pat McLaughlin won 2 All-Stars for Tip in 79 and 80, and he hurled in goals for 5 years and won no championship games, and he won 2 All-Stars.
Oh, wow.
He must have been flat out saving balls. They must have been throwing frosh.
He must have been savage now, but... I'm just saying, that's like, you know, like, that's an anomaly now that you only have back then, where 5 years in a row, won no championship games in those 5 years, but won 2 All-Stars, 79 and 80.
Jesus. All-Stars, yeah.
That's a fair achievement now.
Malachny.
Different times, though, I suppose, as well, when you would have went out first round of the championship if you lost back then.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, I mean, if you lost five, if you didn't win a championship game now, you'd be an All-Star in New York, but you wouldn't be, like, you know, out in San Diego, but you wouldn't be the All-Stars.
The Chicago Hurling Championship is also a fine championship, by the way.
Yeah.
So that has taken us off the beaten track entirely there, but there are defenders winning All-Stars. Where were we? We're trying to work out.
We're talking about scoring, actually, because I got hands.
We spoke about a lot of things, but we probably didn't just lean on Tip enough, did we?
I think Tip have had plenty there.
Yeah.
Right, predictions from both of you then, lads. What do you reckon, Murph? I have a feeling I know where Scale is going here.
I'll go Tip. And like, again, I'm just looking at from the call today that Tip looked to be in a good place, as I said earlier. And Galway just haven't shown me anything yet to go that, you know, that they're going to turn over Tip. So, you know, I'll say Tip by 6.
Oof.
Murph!
I'm just trying to give a prediction, lad. I'm trying to be fair.
Biggest scoring margin since the 1980s, if that's what happens. But
oh, actually, a great point. Yeah.
40 years. So, Willie, when Murph goes looking at like the cold light of day, which means, translates to, you'd be a fool to go the other way. Okay. The other lad's going the other way. Come here. Look, you've seen this movie before, haven't you?
You're like a lad negotiating.
You've seen this movie before, right? Where I've said it about...
You're like a lad that's about to be shot and he's just trying to buy himself more time before he gets shot.
Yeah, okay. Wait.
Taylor Swift lyrics time, go on.
When we played Limerick in the 2 semi-finals, I was like, oh God, I just have to say it. But I knew in my heart of hearts we were going to be bet. In this instance, though, I don't know in my heart of hearts we're going to be bet. I just have ferocious hope we come and fight. I will admit and concede we're very much up against it. I think 6 points has been generous to tip. I will back Galway in the handicap -4. And I'll go
is it a big problem though if you're questioning whether the fight's actually going to be there or not?
It's a problem. Of course, a problem.
That should probably be the baseline.
Yeah, and I think if the public or Galway people took offence to me saying that, right, then your head's in the sand. I think, to be fair, because there's been so much evidence produced over the last 6 months to say that there is a concern there.
I would say a few weeks ago, but go on.
Yeah, that's fair. And I do agree in the line that the management can only do so much with. They can only do so much. Yeah. They can prepare the team. And I've been involved in teams where the preparation has been exemplary, to be honest. But then you come to the end of the game and you just get absolutely annihilated for reasons you're like, well, and maybe you weren't ready for that or you weren't mentally tuned for it. So, and I hate this term, confidence. You know that term? He's looking for confidence. Like, I fucking hate that term, right? I prefer just be courageous and go after it. And whatever be, will be. Do you know what I mean? But don't be searching for confidence like someone has to give you something to make you confident. You go get it, right? So from the Galway perspective, just be courageous and go at it. And what will be. And if we're beaten, we're beaten. Absolutely. But don't be beaten fucking against the ropes with the hands up and taking defence. Be beaten throwing the punches. You know, stand in the middle of the ring and let have it. Let's have it. So that's my fight and talk. That's me G'ing up the lads. And I don't know if I'm going to listen to the pod. Actually, some of them do listen to the pod.
I'm telling you,
they've taken me to task before, a couple of them.
Right, yeah. They listen to the pod, and this is not me blowing our own trumpets here, but you kind of get those few minutes to chat to the players when you go to the All-Ireland launch, because they're killing time between the different pods they go to chat to people. And I don't mean podcasts, I mean you're going from, say, broadcast media to the papers to maybe podcasts and whatever else. And nearly all of them are familiar with the pod, to the point, I presume I tell the Billy Ryan story here, by the way. Poor old Podge Collins and I. Podge was really careful when I told him about this. Where to Billy Ryan, I'd never met Billy Ryan before, and Murph and Richie Hogan had both told us stories previously about cacti around his house and how he was like really, really protective about the cacti, and one or two Kilkenny players tried to break it. So we got chatting kind of before the interview and whatever, and we were chatting away. And then right before we went, Billy Ryan goes, "It's not the first time we've met." Which is just kind of one of those great, "Where's this going?" And he said, yeah, you were doing a live show there in Dublin last year. So yourself and Podge were sitting down chatting in Nando's. I was sitting directly across from you while Podge was talking about the job that Dermot Ryan had done on me in the semi-final. So my ears pricked up and I just listened to him. And he said he was going to pop over, but he didn't want to ruin our lunch before we went along to the Bord Gáis last year. But Billy Ryan was sitting there with his cheeky Nando's eating away across the table from us. So you never quite know who's sitting the other side.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
He said he just kept the head down, kept listening in, was checking what we were talking about ahead of the All-Ireland final and so on, but he was going on
about it. Surprising Podge. Podge is a knowledgeable fella. I thought he might tweak Billy, but yeah, that's good.
It's difficult though. So you're in there, right, and those kind of tables are quite tight to each other and stuff. Mm. And like, he could easily just been across from us and we didn't even pay heed, because you're not thinking that someone's going to be behind us. So Billy said he was just sitting there listening away. And he was saying, he's very familiar with the pod. Like, pretty much all the players I spoke to, like, knew about the pod. Or they, like, asked about one of the two of you. So they knew full well. So lads can say they don't listen to pods. Yeah, Scale came up a few times, yeah.
Yeah.
But he did. It was like, oh, what's Scale going to say about X, Y, and Z? Or where's Scale today? Like, as if on a random Tuesday he was going to follow me to a...
That's the most one I get. And again, well, like, I wouldn't take offence at all when people ask you that about Scale. That's the most one I get now. If someone... cops you and it's, "Where's Scahill today?" Or, "You didn't bring Scahill with you." Anything like that, without fail.
I get it with humor about the army. As if I have access to weaponry. One of my mates was, do you remember you were saying about the grenade, Murph?
Yeah.
One of my mates, right, who I can't name him because it's so ridiculous. He's
asking about grenades, so you don't want to name him, but go on.
Come here. Fair enough. Look,
I'm deadly serious now, he goes to me. "How likely is it that Murph could guess a grenade?" And I'm like, "It's probably very unlikely."
I can answer it now, zero. Nor do I want to if I had the opportunity. So no.
Or especially not admit it on a podcast that you're smuggling grenades out of the current. So yeah. not the case.
Bringing them up to Galway. If you hear big thumps around Galway, that's what's going on. Yeah.
The great part was one of the players who I'm not going to hang out to dry here, because presumably they were listening to the pod on the week they were playing a game, actually said, "Where's Liam Scale?" So clearly they had listened to the podcast.
Oh, that's a very current reference.
It's an incredibly niche reference. I was there going, wait a minute.
My mother has told me reliably that my father had a cousin in County Meath called Liam Scale.
Go ahead.
So, Liam, if you're alive,
maybe he's
listening. Hello.
You're who that YouTube person really wants to hear from a couple of weeks ago. By the way, for those who are listening in audio form at the moment, before we get into game number two, if you do want to watch us, if you're going, I'd like to see Scale grimacing, or I'd like to see him drinking his orange my waddy at the moment while Will is making this plug for where you can actually watch us, you can go to YouTube. We stick them on the Off the Ball YouTube every week. The main podcast goes there. You can view it for free. And if you want to go a different way inclined, you can watch us on Spotify. So every week I put this up. It doesn't go onto the Hurling Pod one because that doesn't have video capability at the moment. But we do have those magic powers on the Off the Ball on Spotify where you can watch this video. And what I particularly like about that, if you want to consume it that way, say you're on the move, you're watching us, and you go, oh, I have to get going, but I wouldn't mind continuing to listen to the pod, hit your lock screen, and it will go simultaneously into audio as opposed to video. So you can just keep listening away, which I think is a pretty nice way of consuming us. So if you want to see our ugly mugs every week, there are two ways of doing so as opposed to listening to us. I know we've got a lot of people who listen and maybe aren't aware that we actually are available in video form as well. A general question for you, Murph, because this came up from a few people. I think Bobby Stakelin was one. I definitely have it written down somewhere that contacted me on Twitter earlier on today about the lack of excitement coming into this weekend. He said, hey lads, just a question. What do you make of hurling covers leading into this weekend? Nothing in the papers, really. No pods bar one. Obviously, we're now making that at least two. It's been wall-to-wall football. No dig at you guys at all. But my God, we only get 12 weeks of hurling. It does feel quite understated. And I know the football launch was on Tuesday in Croke Park, so the hurling launch was last week. Maybe that affects it somewhat. You're coming off the back of a really good football weekend last weekend too, so I understand there's a lot of hype and there's Premier quarterfinals in football. But certainly it feels like the hurling has gone way under the radar this week.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. The hurling is going under the radar. I say a lot of people who would lean more towards the football at the moment wouldn't even really be aware that the quarterfinals might even be happening the weekend. But like, I suppose if you're to be really neutral about it, like if you look at the weekend that just happened in the football without stepping over into our football partners world, like you had a weekend there where Mayo are knocked out automatically. That's a day of, you know, headlines in the papers. Jim McGuinness calls out the CCCC, were they the planners of it? That they ended up having to get a hotel in Athlone and play the match in Roscommon. Like there was plenty of headlines there where I just think that if lads were looking to get 2 or 3 days out of it. And then you have the launch of the football All-Ireland series. And that's the way it goes now. So you have to launch that during the week. So, yeah, no, but it still doesn't take away from the point that there is a lack of coverage for it. I would feel the same myself, even though I know it's fully on, even though I'm aware of it and I'm keeping an eye on it because it obviously massively affects what we're doing. There isn't a lot of coverage about it. Maybe as well, part of it would be is that people are expecting Limerick to beat Dublin. Before we go into that, like, you know, people are still looking at Limerick as going, these are in pole position. So maybe they don't see that game as being, and I'm not taking away from Dublin or Antrim by any of these means, but maybe that's the way people are looking at that. And then they look at Galway and Tipperary and say, that potentially could be a good game, but we don't know yet. So, like, what drives ratings? Like, what drives ratings is the potential for excitement. Where is there a real story at the moment? Maybe there was just a lack of that attention. But I think maybe what, I don't know, Stakelin there, you were saying, was it Declan Stakelin or something?
Bobby
Stakelin. Yeah. Maybe the point, in fairness, his point is still valid, though, where he's saying that regardless, maybe there doesn't appear to be as much of a drive to promote the quarterfinals. They're also happening separately. So you won in Croke Park and you won in Limerick, whereas like last year, both were in Thurles, which, you know, kind of centralizes the whole hype around Thurles this weekend. But they're kind of, that decentralized part of it kind of takes away from it a small bit as well. So, no, I'd agree with him. It's not, there's not as much hype around it. But I'd say the hurling people are kind of wrestling for space at the moment for the week that's in it off the back of a lot of football news stories really happened last weekend. So it's kind of, it is kind of hard to argue with it from that respect. But there is a point still to be made for pushing it out there and promoting it. So
yeah, it's not helping. You got 220 plus point beatings happening in the All-Ireland Premier quarterfinals, which we can talk about in a few minutes time as well, because James Skell was dragged in by this. Go on.
But whose job is it to push? So obviously if you're to get the championship more airtime, whether it be on radio or television, who pays for that? I mean, that's not a loaded question. Like, so I presume to get the marketing, you know, wheels turning, someone has to pay to get this on radio stations. Is that right?
Well, look, the way I look at it is the GAA put a lot of the very frontline players who were available to talk last week for the All-Ireland launch. Yeah, you know, you had Jake Morris, you had Keane Lynch, you had Niall Leary, you had all these kind of, you know, it's sometimes when you go to these, and you'll probably know from attending these from time to time, that they might rotate it around the panel a little bit. and they might send some lad who is actually not that central to the team, because you know he's fairly safe, because the media are going to turn up and he's not going to give you massive headlines. And even if he does, if it's a player who's further down, say, the list of interest on the panel, they're not going to make headlines. But that time, at least for the All-Ireland launch last week, they sent us the big-name players pretty much across the board. And they were captains and vice-captains, and usually a fairly good reason if the captain or vice-captain couldn't be there. And the football, again, this week, they put out all the big guns. So therefore, the media, I don't think, can complain. Mm. The problem is, I think, for the media is that it's really difficult to work out what to focus on. So I'm using my old production hat from Off the Ball here. That if you were facing into this week, right, what is there, aside from having a chat about the Premier League quarterfinals and whether they have any future to talk about, say, in a radio piece on Monday or Tuesday? There's nothing really there. So unless you want to go for, pick someone from Limerick and Dublin a decade ago, or pick a couple of lads from those intense battles between Galway and Tipperary in the past, and maybe do a nostalgia piece on it, like, you'll have your kind of pundit doing the preview of the weekend. But generally, there's not that many stories to really pull apart from these two. Like, Limerick and Dublin have got very little history compared to some of the quarterfinal lineups they're going to have. I know we'll talk about that game in a sec. But unless you go that direction, it's difficult. You're kind of thinking about how to get a creative piece on the hurling for this weekend. While in the football, there's just so many things from last weekend. You could talk to some of the teams that were eliminated. You get someone on from Derry or from Roscommon who went out in the last day. And you've all these like kind of interesting stories that you'd probably put to the forefront. So hurling kind of naturally falls back a bit. And I think the Tuesday launch of the football doesn't help, because the national media are obviously doing out their quotes from that as opposed to the hurling from last week. You'll get some of the stories that were held back naturally from last week, maybe some of the players, but it's wrestling for space. And again, it's the overlap of the season, I think, to an extent as well.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not advocating for not having these preliminary quarterfinals in the football and, you know, hurling quarterfinals on the same weekend and so on. I think we'd stretch the season way too much if these were separated. But at the same time, you know, you can't focus on literally everything, unfortunately.
Yeah, the marketing is driven by interest, though, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And intrigue, like, yes, intrigue is the word, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, you have podcasts like this, which go into detail, and we'll talk for an hour about the games and so on, and you've got most of the other places now have dedicated podcasts probably towards both of the Colts and Gaelic games, because the interest level is there. Thanks a lot, Premier View Pod, by the way, for saying the two lads were decent this week. I worried ever so slightly when I got tagged in a few posts going, did you hear what the Premier View Pod said, lads said about you even? And I was there going, oh, this can't be good. They're going to pick apart something we said about Tipperary. And now Tipperary's tails are up going into an All-Ireland quarterfinal. No, they were bemoaning the Sunday game. And they said that you get at least decent analysis out of James Skell and Paul Murphy.
Decent, Murph, huh?
Decent is as far as I'm...
Above decent, average. Decent is what I aim for. Decent is my ceiling is decent, to be fair. So that's success for me now.
C plus, could do better, but
I
still.
I would take it.
An unexpected compliment. So thank you, Premier Review Pod, for that. And thank you to the multiple people who sent it to me, as if we have some kind of burning rivalry and actually dislike each other. I have no particular issue with the Premier Review Pod's lads at all. Right. Second game of the weekend, then, is one that has a little bit of history over the last while, but generally not a massive amount with these two teams meeting each other. So I mentioned at the outset, bizarrely enough, the only time that Dublin have ever won an All-Ireland quarter-final, because they went to the semi-finals through the Leinster Championship before, was against Limerick in 2011. And Dublin also won the last meeting between the teams, which was the All-Ireland qualifier in 15, when they won by a point, 117 to 1 goal in 16. And the three other championship meetings of the last 100 years were won by Limerick. 2009, an All-Ireland quarterfinal, they won by 4 points. 2006, Limerick won by 6 points in the All-Ireland qualifiers. And then you have to go all the way back to 1934 for Limerick 5-2, Dublin 2-6, which was the replay of the All-Ireland final of 1934. So, really not too much championship history in the last, basically, 100 years, really, with the exception of a few in the last 20. First point on this, Murph, Limerick going to Croke Park. Because there were some people who felt maybe this is unfair in Limerick supporters, because Talla Cup semis are on Sunday. Would that have made a better doubleheader, potentially, if they were there for that? Should Limerick want to go to Croke Park, or do they care about going to Croke Park? Then I was reading John Kiley's interview in the Irish Examiner earlier today. This is Thursday, so it would have come out this afternoon. And he was saying it's no harm to get a run out in Croke Park ahead of a potential semi-final and potentially going to a final. I think that's the way Limerick are looking at it. Now, that was not him saying that they are going to win or expecting to win, but yeah, he was saying it's no harm to play there.
Yeah, like, I mean...
Sorry, I'm digging him out there slightly, but go on.
I know, yeah. Like, the team and the supporters will look at it from two different points of view. The team will be very happy to play in Croke Park because it's a bit more of a benign atmosphere to play in than it is an All-Ireland final or semi-final. Like, I mean, a quarter-final in Croke Park is a little bit unusual. I don't remember the last time it happened. I'm not sure if it has happened even in recent years at all. But like Dublin or Limerick will go into this game, it'll suit them being in Croke Park. I'm not going to say it's not going to suit Dublin, but certainly you'd have to imagine if it was a little bit tighter, Dublin might enjoy bringing it into a bit more of a tighter space. But it'll suit Limerick and it'll be a drier run. A dry run into a semi-final all going well. I'm not writing this game off at all by any means. But again, I'm going to approach it with the same realism that this is Limerick, which a lot of people are still saying. Some people argue they are the favourites. I say including a lot of Cork people would rather people be saying that they're the favourites for the All-Ireland Championship. Again, where we're talking about other teams coming into a quarter-final and maybe needing a reaction or something, or Limerick don't need a reaction. Limerick are very much coming back in to build back up through the gears again. So like this is what Dublin are facing. And like a Dublin team that want to be really competitive over the next few years, you know, this is the type of challenges that they're going to have to face to be, you know, I suppose, really in the mix. It's just a step too early for Dublin at the moment. I don't see, you know, any hangovers from any Munster final playing any sort of role here. So look, for Limerick to go to Croke Park, for players, for management, they're happy. Again, it's another rehearsal for them to get to go into a semi-final, practice the routine of heading up the road. And those things need to be practiced as well. Practicing that routine, you know, well, you were talking about this before the game. Things happened with Waterford there with the Miners before their semi-final. You know, you like to practice all these things, get the dry run going.
Remember Limerick and Waterford with the hay back in the knockout year as well?
What was that?
Do you remember the hay falling on the road and the game ended up starting late?
Yes, I do. Up on the M9 or something like that, wasn't it? Yeah. I was driving up and I came through the bale of hay.
It was Waterford that got caught in the hay, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure Limerick were like already in Croke Park at that point, yeah.
It happened just after the road joins together there, before Naas. So it was just after Newbridge, let's say. It happened somewhere there. So I think both might have been barely impacted by it.
Supporters were caught, I think, as well, trying to get in. It ended up getting pushed back. It was limited attendances. That was my memory, but not that game.
Yeah. But look, barring that, it should be fine for the weekend. I understand why some Limerick people are saying, you know, geez, we have to go to Croke Park at this stage. But look at Clare would love to be heading to Croke Park this weekend. Waterford would love to be heading to Croke Park this weekend. You know, you're heading up the road, you're playing All-Ireland quarterfinal. Like, whether it's at this stage now, when it's getting to this side of the year, whether it's Croke Park, whether it's Turles, whether it's Gaelic Grounds, you're at the business end. Just be happy with that now. And I think, to be honest, if you gave John Kiley a preference, do you want to go and play in Thurles or do you want to play in Croke Park? He'd actually take Croke Park because he's going, listen, this is where we plan to play our next two games after this. And I just think that if I was a supporter and they were saying, listen, they're bringing us to Croke Park, I'd be going, grand, happy days. The boys are getting a run out there. It'll be good rehearsal for a semi-final. So I think that there's not much to that. And I'm not surprised Kylie came out and just said, no, we're very happy to go up there because it completely suits him.
Yeah. Thing about Iscal, you know, we talk about, you said earlier on, I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly here, it's about how you lose a provincial final determines a lot about the next game. Limerick and even some of their fans will point out they didn't actually lose the game after 90 minutes. This was a draw that then went to penalties. Admittedly, it would have been sore to not do the 7 in a row and to not do it at home. But the reality is that Limerick were just as good as Cork across nearly an hour and a half early.
Well, they were. You know, they couldn't be separated, to be fair, in open play. So it's not as if the one team dominated the other or vice versa. It was, you know, very even keel. So, and like when we say even keel, we're talking about they produced a performance that was of a high level, but still there's higher in them, which is kind of the frightening thing. So like when we talk about Limerick, and I think I always have to put an asterisk beside Limerick because we associate Limerick with their best performances that we've seen, you know, the Waterford final in 2020, the Cork one in 22, you know, these type of games we've seen them reproduce the complete performance of hurling, right? That's what they get judged against. You know, so when they don't win a game, you know, naturally what people say, myself included, was they didn't reach the heights of their own potential. So I think getting back on the road, getting up the road, should I say, up to Croke Park, and getting, I suppose, back on the horse, you know, against a Dublin team that, you know, won't shoot the lights out and it will provide Limerick an opportunity to test themselves, yes, but not overexert themselves. Does that make sense? You know, like I'm expecting Limerick to come through this by 10 points, to be fair.
Okay.
But so in terms of a threat, I don't see there being a huge threat, but there's just enough of an opposition. And this sounds disrespectful, I get it, but there's enough opposition in Croke Park for Limerick that it warrants the trip up, which makes, I know how that sounds, Dad. It sounds like it's a wasteful trip, but it's not. We're talking about the third best team coming out of Leinster facing the second best team out of Munster, and I'm talking about a golfing class. But that's reality. It just is. Limerick are just a street side of Dublin at the minute, and we all expect them to go up and do business by a margin of at least 10 points. Like, am I wrong there? 10 points is the minimum as far as I'm concerned, especially in Croke Park. You know, Limerick are exceptional in Croke Park. So they're going to shoot the lights out as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So I'm not focusing on Dublin here. I don't want to be overly negative. And I know how it comes across. I get that. But just it's so hard when it's staring in the face that Limerick are, you know, probably itching to put a performance in after the Munster final and get as I said, get the horse back on, get up back on the horse and make it run the title for the next 4 weeks.
Also, we're bearing in mind as well, unlike the Dublin footballers, you know, when you go to Croke Park and you're going to Dublin to play them, you're playing in a venue where they play all the time. Because the Dublin hurlers play so many of their games in Parnell Park, it's not the same advantage towards Dublin. Now, I hope for their sake, a lot of their football fans come in ahead of the Cork game and are actually there to watch the Limerick game. But that's not necessarily been the case even on double headers.
Yeah, I think it's relevant, Will, to be honest. I think above all teams in the country that that would be influenced by the opposition supporters, Limerick are at the very bottom. They won't be on. They've rocked into the toughest venues, and I can think of Hughsey Park and Innes being one, let's say, where the crowd have been paying for blood. Do you know what I mean? And they've come out on top. So I don't think they give a shit. And they're very familiar with Croke Park. Like they've played in Croke Park far more than Dublin hurlers over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
So they're very well equipped with everything surrounding going to Croke Park on a big day with potentially a full house. Dublin hurlers aren't. They just aren't. You know what I mean? So Dublin hurlers, have they played in front of 70,000 in Croke Park? I can't remember the last time they did. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as if this is a regular occurrence in Dublin. So that this airs on the side of strength for Limerick. So they don't give a shit about who's if 60,000 people are turn up in blue. They'll go in. And then
for them playing against, in front of a very big crowd at Croke Park, you're probably going back to Dalo's Dublin teams, I'd say.
I'd say 2013, the semi-final.
Yeah, that kind of territory, I'd say. Yeah, it's been a while. The only thing is, when you say about shooting the lights out, this Dublin team, and I appreciate, again, standard of opposition when we're comparing this to Limerick, like they did put up some sizable scorelines along the way in the Leinster Championship. If you think of the Wexford game particularly, and I know one of those goals should not have stood, but they've got like a fairly elite free taker, even with Donald Burke out at the moment in Sean Curry. He's got 5.52 in the Championship this year. I know 34 points that have come from frees, but generally he's been free scoring. Keno Sullivan's got 2.16 from play. And then you've got, you know, the likes of Heatherton and Hayes have been putting in goals along the way, and Brian Hayes of the Dublin Variety put in a goal in the first round against Offaly.
So who are they going to mark now? Sean Curry is going to be on Barry Nash. John Heatherton is going to be on Jed Morrissey.
He will.
No, Keane Sullivan is going to be on Billy Kyle Hayes. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's a tough one.
I know. It is, Murph. It is a difficult gap to bridge, even if I put them the right way around. And the other thing about Dublin that would concern me slightly, I thought they put in a very professional performance against Kildare at the weekend. Again, they went out there, got their job done, got their big win. It's whether we're going to see the Dublin type of performance against Galway in the last round. Will we see the Dublin of the second half against Kilkenny and the second half, or sorry, a good part of the game, say, against Wexford? Which of those two Dublins do we see? And even if Dublin hit that level, is that a good enough level to beat Limerick?
No, it's not. Because like the best scenario, I think, for Dublin here is that Dublin go really well for 45, 50 minutes. I don't think we have to apologise for saying things like that. But I was at the quarterfinal last year where they played Cork and Thurles. And the last 10 minutes, they started hurling. And it was just far too late. And it was Cork. It was a Cork team in third gear. I do believe they're a different team now. Even from seeing them this year, they're headed in the right direction. Really like Niall O'Callaghan. All the players they brought in, you know, bolstered by the Nafina success. And even with that, like, you know, Nafina almost beaten by Kilmacud during the championship. There's a lot of good club hurling going on in Dublin. But you can't expect to flick on a light switch and it just to happen overnight. None of this happens overnight. Can they get back? They can get back to a really good level where they could have a pop at Limerick over the next few years, potentially. They need a lot of things to go right for that. But if you consider that last year at this stage, Cork going in third gear, comfortably bet Dublin, you fast forward 12 months, a bit can change during that time, but not a huge amount. The same Cork team in general, the same Cork team, flat out over 90 minutes, barely got over the line against Limerick. So like when you're looking for measurables and bars to measure it off, that's like Cork were able to push them right to the limit and got over the line. Whereas in third gear for Cork, it was enough to comfortably pass over Dublin. So Dublin can't improve that much in the 12 months. But Dublin come out in this game and learn a huge amount that they take into next year. And let's say next year find themselves in a Leinster final and directly, let's say they're going to a quarterfinal or semi-final after. Like that's something realistically Dublin could do. So they go into this game and they might go, okay, we learned X against Galway, we learned Y against Kilkenny. They go and they play Limerick now. And for me as a Dublin player, I'd be looking at this game going, what a brilliant opportunity. Like, we get to play Limerick here. Everyone's going to write us off. We're playing them in Croke Park. We could really go out and stress test what we're about and find out a few things. If we take three things from the game to say, you know what, as an individual player, I'm going to take this from this game because I was marking Dan Morrissey or I was marking, you know, Will O'Donoghue or whoever. I'm going to take that forward with me for next year. As a group, they might go, lads, if we look at them, like their ball movement, their striking, their support, their work, whatever, as a group, they can take something away and go, look at that, lads, that's where we're not. And they can bring their levels up a small bit. It's not moral victories or anything like that, but it's just realistic victories. We're getting into the stage this year where it's like, it's getting cutthroat, you know? And I think I said at the start of the year, if Dublin get to a quarterfinal, that'll be a success for Dublin, considering what we've seen of them over the last few years. This year, if Dublin go out the weekend, this year has been a positive year for Dublin. They've really headed in the right direction, and I'd be really positive about them next year as well. Particularly, like, let's say, getting Donal Burke back into a full year of form, where he was injured this year, and, you know, they couldn't get a good run of him. But I would look at that as being a success for Dublin. So for the weekend, the way I would look at it, go, Dublin go out, perform, but maybe if they stay in that game for 45 minutes, hurling really well, that's much better than not being in it from the start and then rallying in the last 15 minutes and maybe bringing it back to 6 points, because you can't really hang your coat on that. But you can hang your coat on going out from the start, putting in a great first half, going back in, energised into the dressing room, going, lads, 35 minutes and we're down by 3 points, 4 points. You know, not bad. Go out in the second half and maybe just not last the pace. And I know I'm being very specific in saying that, but that to me is... Well, there's a measurable success where you controlled a certain amount of the narrative there, but the match just got away from you because you're playing one of the best teams ever. You know, that in a nutshell for me is a success for Dublin this weekend. And it's a pity to, I suppose, write them off in that way. But we have to be realistic as well about it. And I don't think Niall O'Callaghan has gone into these boys, not saying that they're going to be beaten or anything, but I don't think he's gone into them dressing the whole thing up saying, lads, you know, if we go out here at 80%, we're going to beat these lads. He's not going in like that. But there's measurables that they're looking at to say, lads, if we do X, Y, and Z, well, let's see what happens after that. And I just think it's natural in the building process that you would go through those phases.
Yeah, I asked Dara Gray about that last week about the Cork performance from 12 months ago in that quarterfinal. And he was emphasising that, yeah, it felt like a little bit of a missed opportunity because they didn't really throw a shot till the last 10 minutes. Mm. But he felt they did a lot right about restricting Cork in the first hour of the game. So I'm kind of wondering, it's a different management now, naturally, and some of the players have changed with some of the young players coming in Dublin. I don't know if their approach is going to be different, but maybe it's a case of you stick with Limerick and you at least give your chance going down the stretch where you're actually not beaten before you get there. Skell, I assume Murph has just basically said that Limerick are winning. You've said Limerick by 10 points. So are we in the official, can I stamp this down as all three of you have written Dublin off?
Hold on. Written Dublin off, yeah.
I still have to work in Dublin. You two can stay away from the city.
You're typical media. That's what you do. You twist words there now and poor old lads like us then get caught.
Tread title, so Dublin.
You know, I thought we were friends with, like, you talk about friends and suddenly you do things like that to us. Do you know?
That's the media way of saying, you know, Dublin off.
To be fair now, I don't think it's just the media.
The question I ask when I assess teams right against Limerick is, how are they going to score? How are they going to get at Limerick? Are you going to go through them, over them, or around them? And I can't see Dublin denying them. Can't see it. So, like, when I can't see how Dublin are going to score and get at them, and, like, Dublin to beat Limerick would have to get, in my opinion, 3 goals, if not 4. They're not getting 3 or 4 goals against Limerick. Unless it's garbage time and Limerick are 20 points up. I can't see it happening. I just think the Limerick are too imperious in a high ball. They're too choke-like in the middle for to run through them. And they never allow you to get around them to say sticking passes over 20 yards. They're just exceptional that way.
Yeah.
So, like, look at the energy Cork had to exude to get through Limerick. I mean,
fuck. Yeah.
Look, I very rarely will reference odds on this podcast. It's not really what we do. But depending on what bookmakers you go to, right, the best price I can see right now for Limerick across all of them is 14-1 on. Some bookmakers will offer you as big as 25-1 on Limerick to win. It's not quite the 100-1 on the Tipperary were against Laois last week, but that's a no-chance territory, 25-1 on.
What's the spread? Surely 12-15? If it's 1-14, I'm going to say 12 points.
Yeah, 16.
16 points,
Is generally. I'm just looking again across a few different bookmakers here. Yeah.
Right, so I've said Limerick by 10 or 11.
Yeah. Bookmakers see it as more than that at the moment.
Murph, go for it.
Yeah, Limerick by 10 or 11. I'll join you.
What do you want me to do? You're laughing at me there.
It's just funny because there's this guy, right, and he'd be on Twitter, and it's when the Patriots were in their pomp, right? And he'd always go, like, he always used to sit in the seat where Brady used to run out and get to. You know what I mean? Brady used to always run out of the dugout or the restroom and run all the way down to the far end zone and shout at the crowd. And your man was always there. And he'd always just say at the end of the video, Patriots by a billion. Do you know what I mean? Like, because my man is fired up.
Yeah. Up, like,
Limerick by a million.
Scale Murphy, a boat written Dublin off. Come after them rather than me. The Premier quarterfinals, I mentioned the fact that it was 100-1 on for Tipperary before a ball was thrown in against Leash at the weekend. John Fogarty did the numbers on this one from the Irish Examiner. The average difference now between the Munster teams and the Joe McDonagh Cup finalists in the All-Ireland Premier quarterfinals is 20.33 points. Okay. So generally it's 20 points plus. Again, the outlier is the beaten Leinster team in 2019, which was Leash beating Dublin. Other than that, even take the finalists out of it, take the beaten finalists out of it and whatever else, it's just generally a turkey shoot when these teams meet. For a million different reasons. You're coming out of a competition that's at lower level. You have a 6-day turnaround. If you've just lost in the final, the last thing you want to think about is preparing for another game. If you've won, the last thing you want to think about is anything other than going to the pub and driving around in the bus for a couple of days, and then you have to refocus to play against a team who've been sitting there with a minimum 2-week break after finishing up third in their province. So it's against those teams. We had loads of comments about this. They were flying in on Saturday. There's even been a couple in the last couple of days. I said we were doing the pod a little bit later in the week. This one from SOTS 1980. Would love to know what the boys think about the Joe McDonagh teams playing against Tip and Dublin. Besides Leash's win a few years ago, they really are just lambs to the slaughter. But if you give an extra spot to the Munster and Leinster groups, it'll kill those competitions off. Similarly, Richard Hogan, who is a frequent listener to the pod, said, are we in agreement now that the Premier quarterfinals can't continue in the current format? Do we abandon them or do we start including fourth place teams? If yes, should we have a relegation playoff between fifth in Munster and sixth in Leinster? Okay, a few bits to that. My first thought before we get the two lads, I would hate the idea, and I put this up on Twitter at the weekend as well, of four teams coming out of a five-team group, because it leaves the possibility. I love the Munster Championship right now, before anyone claims it's anti-Munster. If four come out of five, you could potentially have a team who get a draw or maybe even lose all their games and qualifying in fourth place. I realise that's unlikely, because that would mean one or two teams would have to slaughter the teams at the bottom. But you could have a scenario where a team wins a game and just qualifies. That, to me, destroys the Munster Championship. I love that it's three teams who are going all at it to try and get out, and the two other teams would do anything to be in that top three, and therefore all the games feel like they've got something on the line, and it's five teams are roughly the same level. In Leinster, the teams are not at the same level. So if you introduced four teams in there, you may as well put Kilkenny through before a ball is thrown in. You'll have Galway qualify every year in the top four. They only ever finish in fourth place at worst. And I reckon Dublin, and probably Wexford, at least for now, would be entirely safe because they would beat one of the two teams at the bottom and would be in the top four. And therefore, the Leinster Championship, as kind of imbalanced as it is right now, it'd be even worse if it wasn't at least a case of four teams trying to qualify for three. And they end up with two teams, the team who come out with the Joe McDonagh, and I reckon the team who come out with the Joe McDonagh the year before will be playing for bottom place or to maybe try and get Wexford or Dublin out of the Championship. It would make an already flawed Championship even worse if four teams come out. Murph, you're nodding a little bit. What do you think 4-4 coming out?
I think if there's one way to kill the Munster Championship, if there's one single rule you could bring in tomorrow, that's four teams come out of it, because the competition is what makes the Munster Championship. A four team coming out, you would hypothetically, and I'm drawn from the Football Championship because this did happen, we spoke about it before we came on air, I think Roscommon got to an All-Ireland quarterfinal maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, having lost four matches, and they got to an All-Ireland quarterfinal. Hypothetically, a team could lose three Munster matches, draw a game, get out, win their first in a preliminary, let's call it a preliminary quarterfinal, and make a quarterfinal. It wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. So the one single rule that I would be staunch on is that if you have five teams in the group, if you make four come out, kill it stone dead. It's done. There's no point in doing it at all. The one thing I've learned over the last few weeks is, from what I understand from even talking to lads who have come through to Joe McDonagh, so I.e. Leash and Kildare lads on the side of the house, is the preliminaries just don't serve a purpose anymore. Like, fair play, we tried it, and when Leash beat Dublin in Port Leash a few years ago, we thought we might be onto something here. But I think we now, as John Fogarty's thing is pointed out there, the scorelines are just too much. It's not serving its purpose anymore. It's just, it's a hangover match for these lads coming out of Joe McDonagh. So you get rid of the preliminary, and then you tie it in with the fact that people, the other talking point over the last few weeks was the penalties in the Munster final. You then create that space where if you want to play a replay, you give at least one replay then to a provincial final. And if it's then still a draw, potentially penalties, you still don't have enough time. But then the third point that was brought in was Jarlett Burns was saying that potentially they're looking at moving it back to August, the All-Ireland finals, to give that a bit more space. If you put those three things together, you actually have solved three of the problems, that the three main talking points over the last month. So penalties in a provincial final, they go because you're not on time pressure. You can play a replay the following week. And getting rid of those preliminary games also feeds into that. So if a team does go and play a replay the following week, they're not... nobody is scrambling for preliminary quarterfinals. Preliminary quarterfinals. There's none of that stuff.
Just on the preliminary quarterfinals as well, the reason that these came in the first place was to try and make it acceptable to the teams in the Joe McDonagh.
Yeah.
I think the grading has actually generally been quite successful. And I think having a second competition that's of a good value in and of itself, that competition stands on its own feet now. So yeah. I think you can accept at this stage the reward for the Joe McDonagh is that you qualify for your provincial championship the next year. Kerry, if it's in Munster or whatever other team's going to Leinster, that's the reward and you get a cup. Yeah. I still think decoupling it means that the Joe McDonagh could be played a little bit later. You're not rushing to have it played at the same time as the Leinster Hurling Final. Why not have it with an All-Ireland quarterfinal or with an All-Ireland semi-final if you want to play that a little bit later on, and keep that incentive that there's still a big day out for the teams who get to the final. But yeah. I don't think it needs to be a case now of you need to take on a Liam McCarthy team. I can't think of too many competitions at the moment where, I know back in the day, the B winners used to play Galway when they were trying to get an extra game in the All-Ireland Championship way back when. Some one of the listeners will surely know what year that disappeared, where you could come out of one competition into the other. Generally, Galway just put them to slaughter back then as well. So to me, it makes no sense bringing a team from a lower competition. Like, imagine you turn around to... I don't know. Say Leeds win the championship and you say next week you're actually going to have to play against Liverpool. But we weren't celebrating the championship. Yeah, but you got the chance to play Liverpool. Just seems like really, really silly. And I understand that there was a vote a couple of years ago and they voted to retain this. But I think if it's modelled properly, and this is something Willie Marrick can probably talk about right now, and they actually ensure that the McDonagh has its own merit and value, I think you can definitely decouple it from the senior championship. Skell, I'm giving you a broad sheet here after all that. Do you think it's time for the McDonagh Cup teams to be removed from the All-Ireland Series?
I do, yeah. I just think it's time we just remove the actual Premier quarterfinal in general.
Okay.
You know, and if we just remove it and then go ahead to next year's championship in its current format, you know, minus the prelims, I don't think you'd skip a beat, to be honest. And you give it, as Murph said, you give a small bit of wiggle room for that outlier of a replay in a championship final. Because like when I hear, you know, I don't know who you said, Will, that was recommending the fourth place Leinster and Munster team come up, I always ask a question, and it's always three phase, right? Number one, if we make a decision in terms of a championship structure, does that benefit the Leinster or Munster championship itself? So the answer is no. Number two, does it benefit the Ireland championship? The answer is no to me. And number three, does it benefit the sport? No, it doesn't. It actually, what it does is it dilutes the game a bit, doesn't it?
It does.
It makes it less competitive. It takes away intrigue. It takes away interest. It takes away that kind of do or die, you know, scenario and situation that we've grown accustomed to, particularly in Munster. And if you take away all that, you have a very bland championship, don't you? And you're waiting then for the knockouts to come in fucking July. Like so you've wasted May. You've wasted June. In my opinion, you've wasted those 2 months to get to July. So I wouldn't be for introducing the fourth team. Jesus, no.
There's an extreme option here, which is the one that will be totally unacceptable, which would be break up the round robin at the moment, because everyone particularly loves the Munster Championship and we saw the gate receipts are up again this year. I think there's no call for that whatsoever for them to disappear. If that's still there, the Leinster stays in its own format. So I think the idea of going back to a knockout championship and then having a radical All-Ireland series after that, which has a group stage, is not there right now. Maybe in a few years' time, people would say we'd like to see radical change and we'd like to go that way. Just to tease out your idea for a second, Skell, if we're getting rid of the preliminary round, does that mean provincial champions straight to a semi-final and then we got beaten finalists versus third, beaten finalists versus third?
Yeah, yeah. Because at the end of your respective provincial championships, if you're not in position 4 or 5, you're not good enough. That's it. And it depends who finishes in position 4 each year. And what I mean by that is whoever shouts the loudest, right, each year, it depends where they're from and if they finish in 4th. Like last year, Galway got knocked out and finished 4th. You didn't hear boo out of Galway, right? but it depends who finishes fourth in Munster. You know what I mean? And it depends who finishes fourth in Leinster this year. People start hammering on about how we need more inclusion. Lads, you had five games. You couldn't make it out. Good luck to you. Or the same in Munster. You had four games. Good luck. Do you know what I mean? You can cut the mustard, so rock on. So in that revised championship structure, it's very simply put, winners of the championship go to a semi-final, and then 2v3. Two being the second place team, i.e. the losers, play the third place team in the opposite championship. So
Underscale's proposal, by the way, it would be Limerick versus Dublin, and it would be Galway versus Tipperary. Sounds very familiar, those quarterfinals, if this was the new system that was committed. Yeah. So
it's fine.
I don't know, Murph, would it be motion carried for you to do that if we're not talking about ripping the whole thing up here?
Well, we're not ripping Anton up. We're just getting rid of a match that delays the inevitable, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting rid of the preliminaries, where over the last few years, invariably, if you have two matches each year, how long are the preliminaries in? Are they in 8 years? 7, 8 years, something like that. Let's say if they're in 7, 8 years, we've had 16 games and one of them has been turned over by the losing team. So out of 16 games, you have 15 won by the teams invariably we're going to play during the quarterfinal anyway. So the indications are there. And like, it's helping us answer, I'm bringing it back to that point, it helps us answer that other question of how do we not have penalties if that's what people really don't want? How do we not have penalties in a provincial final? We've already given us one extra weekend there where we don't have to do it. We have the question almost answered. And then if we just push the All-Ireland finals back a small bit more, we have it fully answered. And we also then do the other thing of where Kildare head off into the sunset after winning the Joe McDonagh.
Literally, let them go on holidays.
Yeah, let them go off, like, you know, and they get to, you know, they get to have, I met Brian Dowland on Sunday morning there, and credit to Brian Dowland. So he's an Loughlin Gales man, but he's living out in our parish. And he was up coaching the under-9s Sunday morning. It was fantastic for him. Like, you know, he was up coaching the under-9s. He's a great man to do at 10 o'clock in the morning of a Sunday morning after being beaten. But at the same time, like, I'm sure he would have happily enough, now you could ask him, but I'm sure he would have happily enough finished up in Croke Park with his team, head out the door with the cup, and that's your memory, you know, whereas an extra week, you know. So anyway, but that's all ground that's been trodden before. People know about that. So, yeah, I think there's lots of obvious answers there.
Yeah,
and motion carried.
Motion carried. I wouldn't want to take away from the moment for some of these teams. So Kildare, even after taking that beating, were clapped off by their fans in Newbridge the weekend just gone by, and it was great. A lot of the football fans went in early, headed to the Kildare Offaly game and watched them, and they got all that respect that they deserved. But you probably could have paraded the team without a game before that game anyway.
Yeah.
It was difficult. And those lads were quite literally on the beer until Tuesday. Because I know when I was talking to Paul Dolan, he was like, I'm happy enough to get away from the celebrations. And nobody would ever, you know, want to take away from their enjoyment of winning a Joe McDonagh and going up to senior hurling for next year. And naturally, when you ask these, I asked Paul Delaney from Laois, and I asked Paul Dolan about this, you know, is it a good thing you have a game this weekend? They're going to say the right thing. And they're going to say, look, totally, it's great to have a Division 1 county coming down. It's great to have a big day, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is that even in Port Laois on Saturday afternoon, there were very few Laois fans there. It was nearly all Tip fans in the rain who were just watching it. And they were watching their team getting a run out before playing against Galway. You say prolonging the inevitable by 70 minutes before it gets there. So motion carried. Bye-bye All-Ireland Premier League quarterfinals is the judgment of the hurling pod here. Have your say in the comments. Spotify, YouTube were, again, a little bit spicy last week with the amount of comments that came through. I'm not going to read any of the mean ones because we've gone far enough into the pod now at this stage. But a quieter week. When we have these break weeks during the quarterfinal and semi-final, we might review some of the things that have been said. For now, Paul Murphy, thanking you, sir.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Kell, try and enjoy Saturday as best you can.
Enjoy, he says. Okay, thanks.
I don't mean that as in what's going to happen on the field. I just know what Skell is like when he's watching his own county. It's probably prefers it to be over, whether it be a win or a loss. So we will talk to you again. We'll be back on Sunday. Again, we apologise for the pod being a little bit late this week. We'll be back Sunday evening. Talk to you then.